prepare yourself for the boasts of battle.
There has been a fascinating meme going around the internet during the last week called #4comics. Started by prolific comic writer Jim Zub on Twitter, he asks creators and fans to post the four comics that really inspired them in their youth. With such an interesting premise, I decided to jump onto the bandwagon. However, narrowing down the influential comics in my life to a mere four was a bit more trying than initially expected. However, when thinking about which comics were inspiring only as a youth, four comics did eventually rise to the fore. Though I can't necessarily vouch for their current impact or importance, there is no doubt that young comic reader Dan was pushed into the realm of story creation and drawing by the four comics mentioned here. First, X-Men number 1, published in 1991, written by Chris Claremont, with art by Jim Lee and Scott Williams. This was the first comic I ever purchased and was hooked from the get-go. It was, it could be argued, a signal flare that helped to ignite everything that went wrong with comics in the 90s. But I hold on to it because of its incredible nostalgic value. Aside from being the first comic I ever purchased, it also set an aesthetic standard that took a while for me to shake. Not that it needed to be shaken, but because of Jim Lee's admittedly astounding art in this issue, well, for the first 11 issues of the series, it was basically all I wanted to look at. Jim Lee's style became the quote-unquote Marvel style, if not the industry style, for the entirety of the 1990s. But there is no comparison to the original, no matter how many Lee lookalikes they put on X-Men after he left. It's because of his style that, while Jim Lee was on the book, I only read X-Men comics and thought everything else, no matter Marvel or DC, was terrible. When Jim Lee left the X-Men to co-found Image Comics, I dropped all Marvel subscriptions and followed all of Jim Lee's Image books. Though the aesthetic eventually wore out on me, I would argue that Jim Lee's style is still what underpins every drawing I make, no matter how much I may fight it or deny it, and it all started with X-Men number 1. Second, X-Men God Loves, Man Kills, published in 1982, written by Chris Claremont with art by Brent Anderson. When I first read this X-Men graphic novel, which I'm sure I bought at the local strip mall bookstore Walden Books, I was blown away by what was an original concept for me in superhero comics. It had a profound social message beneath all the action scenes and spandex. A little preachy, but no less impactful, God Loves, Man Kills is not talked about very much, even though it was one of the stories used as the basis for the second X-Men movie. But to read such a moral superhero story at a young age, I began to wonder why more comics weren't doing what God Loves, Man Kills did. It's been at least a decade since I read it. I don't think I even have the book anymore. But certain images stick with me through to today that undoubtedly shaped this type of stories I enjoy reading in comics, though so rarely find, from the big two. This book was added to my library early in my X-Men reading days, and as much as the story hit hard, it was a nice bridge for me between the X-Men I met in X-Men number 1, which kicked off the 90s X-Team takeover, and the classic X-Men stories and style that inarguably started in 1975, with the addition of writer Chris Claremont, who helmed the book continuously for 16 years. Despite the fact that it didn't read like the typical 90s absurdity I was used to at the time, it did offer clear introductions of the main characters, their superpowers, and how they worked together as a team, something that wasn't done so well in the 90s comics, but was a mainstay of the genre's narrative before. Also, despite the fact that Brent Anderson's art didn't look like Jim Lee's, his style is undoubtedly cinematic and effective, something that this story needed, and as much as it pains the 12-year-old in me to say this, something I don't think Jim Lee could really accomplish during his X-Men heyday, though God Loves, Man Kills was long before Lee arrived on the scene. Anderson's imagery hit hard and heavy, and even though the comic was full of spandex and laser beams, it left a mark that stuck with me upon closing the book, realizing I had read something important. More than any other book on this list, I would hand this to a person who was not a comic reader as evidence that comics work on the same level as any other socially impactive media. Third, Darker Image number 1, published in 1993. Darker Image is one of many failed experiments during the early days of Image Comics, because it was saddled with as much innovation as excess. Containing three short stories with art by Jim Lee, doing an amazing pastiche of what was, at the time, Frank Miller's de rigueur high-contrast style closely associated with Sin City. Rob Liefeld, he of Captain America with boobs fame, but he also created Prophet, so he gets a lifetime pass with me. and Sacramento's own Sam Keith. I was entranced by the wide variety of styles, stories, and sass. Admittedly, Keith is the only artist in here doing what he always does, and as ever, it's amazing. But both Lee and Liefeld are challenging themselves with their art, something that makes this single issue stand out as a strange, beautiful blemish in the otherwise rather stale 90s image style. Again, Lee proves that he is an incredibly capable artist with the story that debuted another of his original creations, a sort of Rambo with superpowers called Deathblow, who went on to his own long-running series. Deathblow showed an entire new side of Lee that I'm sure most of his fans weren't expecting, and showed young artists that even when you're on top of the world, you need to keep experimenting, pushing your talents, so that when you put pencil to paper, you're drawing, rather than relying on mere muscle memory. Sam Keith premiered with Image Comics what became his signature creation in this issue, the Max, and led to a long-running, respected solo series, and even had an amazing animated version made by MTV. His style is incredibly unique and remains one of the few artists around whose work I look at and ask, how did he do that? Now it's Rob Liefeld who really pushes himself here, particularly with the inking. Though the character, Bloodwolf, is a bit of an on-the-nose parody of DC Comics' Lobo, and the storytelling is heavy on the meta-humor, I feel as if this is probably the most focused and honest Liefeld project ever to be created. It feels like the kind of stuff he would draw and just leave hidden in a drawer for people to find 50 years later, after his death. I guess what I'm saying is that Bloodwolf reads, and the character didn't last long beyond his appearance here, I believe, like a passion project, and because of that, I think it may actually be the best thing Liefeld ever did. Which would have been lost, I argue, had it gone to a full series. Freed from all the shackles of personal and social expectation, there are no straight edges, and the inking is loose and progressive for the 90s, carrying, dare I say, a Mobius type of inkwork very comfortably. Darker Image was intended to be a miniseries, but it never got beyond the first issue. In some ways I'm glad, because it's actually a real gem for all of its indulgences. I read through it again from time to time and still get overcome by that sense of excitement and wonder that I had when I first read it. Fourth, Blade of the Immortal, Criminal, published in 1996 with story and art by Hiroaki Samura. Dark Horse Comics' first double-size issue of Hiroaki Samura's amazing Blade of the Immortal fantasy-slash-samurai epic blew me away when I first read it. Eventually, I began dropping all of my subscribed titles to Image and Marvel, and for a few years, Blade of the Immortal was the only comic I regularly bought and read. Samura's art is incredibly grounded, and at times, pretty experimental. Much of the art in the series is solely drawn in pencil, showing the skill the classically trained samurai brings to comics. His sense of composition, anatomy, and dynamics impresses while still being clearly manga and following many of those conventions. However, what made this comic stand out for me was how the art changed depending on samurai's intent for the page. He would bounce between leaving the drawings in pencil, and it being more fully rendered, and the more traditional pen and ink. And especially upon further readings, the reader can't help but notice that this medium-based schizophrenia was actually a choice, and not a consequence of laziness, or, as was sometimes the case, redrawing a panel as a way to ease translation to Western audiences, a conceit rarely done by other manga artists. Though incredibly violent, gory, and unsettling at times, Samura's compositional sense, character design, storytelling, and premise hit me really hard, especially as I started to discover the artist I was in late high school. It's a hard comic to recommend because of how R-rated it can be, but based on art alone, it's nigh peerless for its creativity and talent. Again, some of these comics I wouldn't necessarily consider all that influential on the comicer I am today and the work I'm making. However, as the catalyst for starting that trek, I can't shun any of these for any reason. Because even though some have been buried under my artistic house for years, that does mean that they are the foundation upon which the house was later built. I'm D. Bethel, and that was my boast. Thank you for listening.